on a good show. So the only reason they never let him was they were afraid. And he was already blacklisted in music, so they weren't going to let him do that. He'd be too smart. In that sense, he might have become a Trump proxy. He might have become really popular as spokesman for the cynical, for the ones not impressed with glamour.
The enemy.
Yeah. And most of the chemical body is in the position of being the enemy. That's Trump's charisma. They call them the angry white man. No, it's not the angry white man. It's the ripped off human body, chemical body that's pissed off. Not limited to angry white men. There's all kinds of people angry for all kinds of different reasons, different ages, races, and ages and sexes. So they're really, the journalists want to limit it to... they want to keep it on the man versus woman level, so that gives Hillary a chance. She can say, I represent the women, and we're up against this patriarchal asshole. So, what was that point there? Trump is representing nostalgia for the chemical body, trying to get control. And it can happen, because the Android meme's shrinking. The Android meme is smaller than you now. It contains huge environments, but you can float around the Android meme and attack it in many forms. He is really the Web 2.0 candidate. He's representing the blogger.
Develop that a little more, the blogger analogy.
Well, in Web 1.0, in came email. In came going to different websites, and then forums and chat lines, and nobody, and going to corporate websites, or websites that somehow got their shit together, got funding, and therefore you would go look at them. Well, with Web 2.0, which begins with MySpace, and then YouTube in 2004, 2005, and all the other super angelization of the digital discarnate body, you started to make your own space and you could broadcast. You no longer were going to
you publish
mainstream broadcasting, right? You and comedy.
Yeah, you're your own publisher.
Your own publisher, movie maker, video maker. So you are king of the media. That's Howard Stern's problem. He ain't the king of the media anymore. He can't be the king of the media. But people do. Little man looks for a central image. They don't want to have total power and make their own world. They want to have somebody being a bigger world than you, that you can bug, that you can snipe at, that you can dance on the toes of. So Web 2.0 was everybody broadcasting their own objection to the mythical virtual supernova of some centralized place. But as the 2005, 6, 7, 8, and 2010 unfolded, there was no center.
Everybody had spent enough of themselves trying to find that center, and then it took long enough that people realized there just isn't one.
Right. Well, the last one was a sitting duck. It was dumb George Bush, or the guy who had the dumb image. He actually, played possum. He played dead. He said, I don't engage in the information environment. So he survived 8 years by not engaging, and everybody just taking pot shots and trying to figure out how we're going to get out of this mess. This icon out of the White House has been ruined by the dumb George Bush and his horrible, stupid wars that led nowhere. So he was the final dead corpse of the center. So what is Obama? Obama is the mystery candidate. Nobody knows if he's even an American. He represents some kind of intergalactic invasion. There are websites out there that show that he, as a young man, went to the moon on secret missions with the CIA. Now, that's Albert Weber's site. And there's a whole industry of these guys who go around on the New Age circuit. It's saying that they worked with Obama when he was 22 years old and went to Mars. There's a lot of that kind of information out there. And then there's the more mainstream that, okay, he's not even an American. So there was no president after George Bush. Obama's a different phenomenon. He violated all decorum by going on talk shows and stupid shows and entertainment shows, right? He broke the barrier. It's like there's what is that? The division between serious, responsible public space and a comedian broke down.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, other presidents went on shows and stuff like that.
No,
it didn't feel
I don't even
so
follow it.
Like...
Hey, Nate, I never followed it, but I would find out later. Oh, my God, Trump went on, and he named some show I never heard of. I'm just registering the outrage that went out by people. You could just pick it up on chat forums. It doesn't matter where you are. Someone's going to come in and talk about Obama, no matter what forum you're on. And so I'm only citing what I heard. You know what I mean?
Sure.
That they were outraged that he went on... you know, Nixon went on Jack Parr in 1960, and he played the piano, and that helped. But when the president starts going on raunchy post Johnny Carson shows, that was a bit indignant or undignified.
Yeah,
and I don't know.
A little below his pay grade.
Right, and he went on Reddit. Reddit is that place that, you know, I was quoting those guys saying that Bob's an alien and he's this, all those crazy quotes about a month ago about me.
Yep, I remember.
On Reddit, that's what he went on Reddit. He went on that place and engaged tweeting, you know, interacting digitally. So, yeah, I don't think Obama, every angle can support their view. He's been a total failure. As a president. Now, I get emails from Ike Willis, one of the main Zappa guys in the 80s. He's always posting, or his friends are always posting, proofs that Obama is the greatest president ever. He's created the most jobs, the most welfare, the most this, the most that. There's all this statistical layout of how Obama is an incredible, successful president, but the racist white media, you know, suppress that fact. That's what I get from Mike Willis, and he's black, and I get that kind of stuff comes from his site. They think the criticism of Obama is a neo-Nazi thing.
Hmm.
You know, racism. So, nobody knows if Obama did anything. It's just each meme, each faction has their statistics to prove. Here's Trump saying that Obama is one of the worst presidents we ever had. What's it based on? What did Obama do bad?
I think he got that on a napkin, so you know you can trust it.
Yeah, the napkin told him. Now, that's an interesting thing. One of the main interviewers of me was Nardwar the human serviette. That's what he called himself. Nardwar the human serviette. And he actually in the 90s actually got on CBC as a cultural commentator. But he's this ridiculous guy out in Vancouver who confronts rock stars backstage with this ridiculous high-pitched voice and mocking them. And usually he got famous because you'd watch footage of the rock star being just shocked at this idiot haranguing him. And some of them would get interviewed. But I came on that. I was interviewed by him right around the X Day in July 1998. And I did so well with him that people called in and said, you know, Nardwar, I never thought I'd see it, but I think you've met your match. This Bob Dobbs guy is the most absurd thing I've ever heard. I out-absurded Nardwar.
What button does he play?
What'd you say? What?
Which band do you play with?
Which pun?
Which rock band? Rock band.
Yeah.
Which rock band?
Church of the Subgenius. I was on there because of the Church of Subgenius, because it was July, the famous X Days, July 5th, 1998, and he was enough young guy to know about Church of Subgenius, and he heard that there was this real Bob Dobbs, and he was genuinely intrigued. He couldn't believe it. And it was in the news in July 98 because they were having their big X Day. That was the day the UFOs were supposed to come. And they made a video. They all met in upstairs New York at this resort, staying in everybody, and there's a long video of all the weekend activities. Well, what happened when the UFOs didn't come Sunday morning at 7 o'clock on July 5th, 1998? They took Stang and they threw him in a pond and tarred him with pink feathers. Okay? So I was given the video of all this, so I watched it. So there he is, standing there crying, pretending that Bob's vision was a lie and the X's didn't show up at 7 o'clock the morning of July 5th, 1998. So somebody in the audience says, I guess the Canadian Bob was right. They start praising me. And Stan goes, yeah, go to Canada. Yeah, you guys go hang out with him, that idiot, that creep. So I'm actually disgusted at the last act of the fucking performance.
Right, it's the first and the last.
Yeah, everything is about you.
Yeah, it always becomes about me. It's incredible that it's all about me and how I remain a successful, low-profile guy who does not have reporters hassling him yet. And, of course, we're well-prepared.
Who hassles the likes of Nardwar.
Yes, I want to play you that. Here's what happened.
Well,
I got something to tell you.
The only reporter hassling you is me.
That's right. And we're not sure what you are. You're using Ion to prop up your family history. You're finding out that you were at the core of everything, or at least your great-great-grandfather. So yes, we're not sure if Roxy is a triple agent and what she's an agent of. Right, Roxy?
Probably quadruple agent.
Wait, you both spoke. What'd you say, Roxy?
I work for the Habsburgs.
Yeah. She is the Illuminati bitch. She actually is the bitch from the old Illuminati. No, really. Roxy could be, if you look at what she's finding out, and what Ion says about the people that she's investigating, and have you followed enough of this, Nate, to know what she's discovered in the castles and all that?
Not a lot of the discovery. I just know that's been your main line of research. I know that was a shift, you know, do you think the last year or so or something like that?
You mean caused by Roxy?
Yeah, I'm wondering when Roxy started really getting into the castles and the ancestry.
Oh, that only happened a couple months ago.
Okay.
Yeah, it felt kind of recent. Well, Roxy,
because of Seppa.
Right. This show, that's right, this fucking show, we do so much, we can't even remember what we did. This show caused Roxy, she looked into the Japanese monster movies of the 50s and found that there was a big cultural celebration of these cheap monster movies that came out of Japan that Zappa celebrated in his music, like King Kong. He used to, you know, he grew
I
up
I loved
in
those
movies.
Well,
did you know Zappa was the first celebrator of them?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay. So Roxy just checks out this monster movie thing because Frank was into it, so I don't know how much Roxy knew about
yes.
it. But she checked
I'm
it out.
I'm actually taking a break.
Yeah, she thought she was taking a break, and she went over and found that the Japanese culture vultures, the elite, were celebrating the wonderful B-movies, the Japanese movies, because they held Japan together after they'd been nuked in Hiroshima. It was a big, important cultural retrieval. In other words, there's no cliche back then. It comes back as an archetype. So then, how did it go from the Japanese monster movies to the castles? How did that happen?
Yes, there was in the YouTube a video with the picture of Frank the First with the thing you have on the bottle.
Yeah, the RNA drops.
And that was it was related to Godzilla because the symbol of Frank the First was the salamander that sometimes really looks like a dinosaur or Godzilla.
Right, that's where they came. So are you saying that the Japanese footage referred to King
Frank?
No,
it was one of the videos, you know, the Android me sort of proposes things to you when you watch something.
Oh, right. This was a special message to you from Ion.
But,
right? He's serendipity.
Yes, I've seen that painting of Frank the First many times, but I never noticed the
RNA drops
the
in
background.
Between. Yeah. So, but does it come from a Japanese documentary? How do you go from the monster movies?
No, it's not. It was related to the theme of like the reptiles or the Godzilla.
Right, the salamander.
The salamander.
Right. Okay. So then, somehow the Japanese salamander becomes this monster Godzilla, and then the salamander is in King Frank. So it just slips over in there. Okay. So that's how we got into this, Nate. And then, wow. And then she finds out it goes back into her own family. That's what's amazing.
Interesting. So then how'd the castles come into it?
Well, the king, who is this king who she studied? I mean, her main education was in French. She went to a French school in Mexico. The higher society of Mexico believed in French education. So Roxy being a Mexican princess or a Toltec princess or a Spanish princess or a Basque princess, take your pick, she goes to the special education and they learn about King Frank. And as a kid, she saw that picture. He was the guy who started France, started the nation. So she sees the fleur-de-lis or the column on the Arne Drops design, the top of the Ionic column, is in King Frank in the background, but it's upside down.
If you turn the bottle upside down, you see that there are like three faces of a king with a crown.
Right, and that was in King... Okay, so
see figure and ground, the figure of the painting is the portrait of Frank the First. And the ground on the background and the fabric, the brocade, you can recognize that face that is in the bottle.
Right. So here's what happens, Nate. She looks, who is this King Frank? She looks into who he is and finds out that he was the last friend of Leonardo da Vinci. That's what blew her mind. This fucking guy, Da Vinci, leaves Italy and starts hanging out with King Frank? Why? What were they doing? And then they made this castle. Then she looks at this castle, and it's an incredible, huge 150 rooms, and then we never heard from Roxy again. She disappeared, went down the rabbit hole, and ended up talking about her fucking great-great-aunt, who are nuns, who met all these people.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's a good example of someone creating their own reality. And you're really studying yourself.
Yeah, quite a tight weave.
Yeah. And so she sent me today copies of the books that her great-great-aunt, who started a nuns' convent order in Mexico, and it went around the world, this is 150 years ago, and online she can find her great-great-aunt's books. So she was. She sent me the pages of the. I think the description of St. Cloud Castle, St. Cloud. I couldn't read it. It's in another language, but they're there online. And then she goes and starts reading her great great grandfather. He's the brother of the nuns or the father? Who wrote those books?
Those are the sisters of my great grandfather.
Yeah, but they're sisters. I sometimes think they're the father. And
my great-great-grandfather was the diplomat, and he also wrote many books.
So the guy who wrote the books is the brother of the nun sisters, and so it's not the diplomat who writes the books, it's the son who writes the books, right?
No, those are the nuns.
One of those people, he wrote many books. Remember we found a publisher in South Africa 3 months ago that republished them? The History of Mexico books.
Yeah, those are from my great-great-grandfather.
Don't say that. Are they the brother of the nun or the father? Who wrote them?
The father.
Ah, and the father is the guy who worked at the Vatican, right?
Yes, he worked everywhere.
There's a painting of this great, I don't know how many greats you put, great-great-great or great-great, the father of the nuns, there's a painting of great, him great. Leading the Mexican delegation of nobility, which are all Basque, because the Spanish king only gave the Basque because they weren't invaded by the Moors and they would be more loyal. There's this whole story behind that. And there's her great-great-grandfather presenting the crown to Maximilian. That's a well-known painting, you
will
see. So she sees this guy, and then I remember in that period, she suddenly sees that the South Africa publisher republished this guy's books today. Why republish them? What's value about them? So now she's reading those books, and now really looking into her family, and we find out that this guy who was in the Vatican had an affair, I got more details on that today, had an affair, a tryst, with the genius behind Tesla. Marie Henrietta, who's the wife, the estranged wife of Leopold II. And these people are still alive today, monitoring what they're doing. monitoring what we're doing, I mean. They're monitoring us.
There's
who isn't, though?
There is no dead, and everybody's around.
Yes, not many
there,
people.
There is the two physicalities.
Right. The castles are these incredible environments, multi-world and weird situations. We won't go into all the details, but Roxy's talked about it before, probably on this series. Parallel worlding castles. There's 12 of them on the Loire River. And that's what
Roxy
discovered.
Yeah, I watched a couple things about that.
Right. So let's go back. So why are we talking about this? Godzilla, like, how did we get... We're talking about Zappa. How did we go from Zappa to this?
All these things actually came from doing Zappa.
Right, that's right. Zappa caused this. But we're talking about what would Zappa do today if he was around? Would he satirize Trump? What would McLuhan think? McLuhan was the first, you know, talking about a comedian being a president. He used to call them Emperor Clown, and he said. Bucky Fuller was an emperor clown of philosophy. He was a famous architect. He said that Pierre Trudeau was an emperor clown. Emperor cum clown, I think was the phrase. It didn't take today. But he says America was the crux of the global theater. It was the one country that was responsible for everything, so it had to be serious. It could never afford an emperor cum clown. 40 years ago, 50 years ago, it was serious. It was running the war against the communists, and you had a real problem in Vietnam and around the world. America was the bastion of all that was sane, and they could not afford to be jokers. And then, so then the gradual erosion of the jokers is you get a peanut farmer. A peanut farmer is president? That's Jimmy Carter. And then a Hollywood actor? Who acted very serious and kept the American archetype going, right? He revitalized it, but he was an actor. That was sort of, things are getting flimsy here. And then George Bush is a CIA guy. Oh my God, his big brother's running the White House. CIA director. And then you have a good old boy, Clinton, who's just a nut. I asked John.
And saxophone on the Arsenio Hall show.
Right. That's right. He started to violate the boundaries. So he couldn't come on and be a joker, but he had to have a talent, but it's rock and roll talent.
And it connected
so,
with the youth.
Yeah, there's reports Clinton's been acting odd. Mr. Clinton, he's been speaking oddly, and so there's rumors about his mental health. So I asked Ion, is Bill Clinton going crazy? He says, are you kidding? He's been crazy for years.
Still crazy after all years.
Yeah. So Clinton was, we're talking about the denigration of the serious image of the White House, the heart of the American battle against all this evil, the city on the hill. And so it gets eroded from, you know, Carter to Reagan to Bush to Clinton. And then, after Clinton becomes the dumbest guy in the universe, you know, George Bernard Shaw, reading him in LaRouche book, George Bush, he says he doesn't read newspapers, he debated Gore, and he won by winking. He had nothing smart to say against the super-informed Gore guy, but Gore didn't know that information was obsolete. So, while he was pontificating with all his facts and how he created the internet, George Bush is on the sidelines winking at the audience. That's
George
why
Bush
won.
Is flirting with the audience.
Yeah, he's flirting. You say, look at this guy. He thinks he knows something. He thinks information is important. He doesn't know the medium has no message anymore. So Bush totally wrecked it, and then Obama took it to another place. So that means it's time for the emperor cum clown. Finally, America has eroded its self-image enough to have a Trudeau image. Yeah, you could write a column. Trump. Remember, he's going to be king. He's not going to be a leader. He's going to be a king. He's not going to be subject to any political, legislative, executive, judicial triangulation and compromise. He's on his own. He's a king, going to create his own space. So he's an emperor cum clown. Awesome. Now, this is supposed to be a show about Zappa. Let's try to,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, let's bring it in.
definitely, but it is exactly how one would talk about Zappa, because he interacts. Everybody says in the 90s they used to say, "Oh, I wish Zappa was around to satirize the internet, to satirize all the things that's happened in the last 25 years." Everybody expected Frank to come out with an amazing, beautiful satire of something, and he's not been around, so people have been looking for it. So if he was here, he would talk about the fads. And the fads more and more have centered around the heart of the Android meme, the late Android meme, which is the White House. So he definitely would be commenting on Trump and all these things. So we're trying to figure out what Trump is. This is the kind of thought process that Zappa engaged as a composer. Stravinsky didn't do that. Verez didn't do that. They did not engage in the global theater and battle with the White House image. I mean, remember, Zappa's, one of his great songs is, starts off, "Dickie's such an asshole," you know, talking about Nixon and Watergate. That's the lyric. "Dickie is such an asshole." And Frank could only get away with this because he had enough decentralization in the recording industry to make his own albums and have his own company.
Yeah.
But he couldn't have put that stuff out.
Maybe you can comment in this. Marshall McLuhan said TV turned politics into participation.
Mystique.
Some type of police. Yeah. And it's more like a rock concert. It's not really being engaged in socially or politically or having some ideology.
Yeah, ideology.
More like attending a concert, a rock concert or a football game.
Right. Let me explain that. You've said enough. Ideology is the key point. The public was created by the printing press. One public. And the members of the public would develop opinions and a point of view about religion, politics, education, culture, okay? And they were supposed to be informed in these fragmented topics and then vote on the smartest opinion about what to do about whatever the issues were and problems were. Once you bring in mass man, the electric world, you don't have a public of educated, opinionated, with the viewpoints, a point of view kind of citizen. You don't have citizens. You have mass angelic, discarnate man. And mass man does not have a point of view. You can't have a point of view. There's too much going on. The mass man becomes a role player and engages in the drama of the moment, the crisis of the day, and that's called the participation mystique. I think he got that phrase from Owen Barfield, who got it from anthropology. The anthropologists talked about how the natives were so involved in their fantasy of their weird tribal world that it was not based on a detached, literate point of view. It was just basic acoustic surround. You're forced to dance. When you live in acoustic space, the drums are going all the time. You have to keep in rhythm. Or you can drop out of it. You know, just run away and leave the tribal trance. So we were becoming more and more a tribal and trance people. But at first, in the 60s, people said, McLuhan is predicting the retrieval of tribal man, tribal, non-opinionated, not subject to ideas, just participates in the drama, the crisis, the war, either as part of the war or against the war. So that was the first image. Everybody thought McLuhan was saying mass man was tribal. Well, one day in the seminars in the 70s, you know, late 60s, in this early 70s, McLuhan said, "Mass man is not tribal." I look around. Nobody's fucking doing a double take. What? Mass man is not tribal. And I listened, and I noticed it. So I started reading his stuff, and I noticed he said, here and there he said, mass man, modern 1960s, 70s man, is not tribal, because he's gradually becoming a singular, automated, matrix-possessed hallucinator. There is an autonomy where you start doing your own thing. You don't do the tribal thing like the Nazis did in World War II and everybody fought in World War II. You're now more and more getting isolated by early digital technology, so you're making your own space, and you've got your own transistor radio. McLuhan used to talk about the image of the teenager coming down the street listening to his own transistor radio, not the tribal radio of the 30s. He has his own autonomous radio that he can program or listen to at his own time. You're beginning to get the video recorder where you can watch things not in the tribal trance but at your own convenience. So autonomy is coming in. A disconnect from the tribal trance of the early... Yes, the Walkman is the beginning of the digital phase, you could say. So my image back then was the astronaut floating around the planet. That's where the do-your-own thing came in the 60s, that you were becoming an astronaut floating around all the older broadcast media. And the Internet replays that. Now you're floating. You're a cybernaut. You're not an astronaut, but you're floating around all the media, especially in Web 2.0, and you're taking pot shots. You're like a Dr. No in a James Bond movie floating around the planet, you know, attacking cities from your little spaceship. So there was a new level of a virtual autonomy on the Internet. So McLuhan saw that, and he said, okay, mass man is beginning to be split. He's neither tribal, he's neither autonomous, he's a bit of both, and he's something else. He's an angel, super angel. So that was the beginnings of noticing quadrophenia. So back, so people like William Irwin Thompson, they start writing in the 80s, sort of reevaluating McLuhan and saying, McLuhan was right, there's some kind of weird tribalism going on. And so Thompson said the citizen is gone. The problem with LaRouche is that, says Thompson, he's trying to, you know, harness citizens to join a political party, an independent third party, and take over the White House, have a coup. But Thompson said, no, people are very involved in electric media, and they consider politics, he said, as much as a rock concert. When you engage in an election year, you're going to rallies, much like you've been doing for 20 years at rock concerts in stadiums. So he called that the participation mystique, or the participant, the drunk involved participant of electric media. And then he said that the elite today, and he said this 10, 15 years ago, they do not engage. The Illuminati does not engage in electric media. They meet on golf courses. They don't broadcast. They remain relatively invisible. So he knew that we'd move to a post-information environment, while the techno-peasant is very involved in not having a point of view, but finding the band they like or the politician they like, and then going to the rally and drowning out anybody who disagrees with your brand, which is what you see at the Trump rallies. They start yelling at one voice, one Matrix Web 2.0 guy who yells out, "You're a fucking asshole, Trump," and then the whole hive mind yells at the guy. You know what I mean? But he does have the one voice that protests Trump is a product of Web 2.0. And Trump is mirroring back Web 2.0, but Trump is putting on the participant mystique. He's reviving the rock concert aspect of politics. So it becomes a movement.
The problem, I think, with the older candidates, or LaRouche.
Right.
They're old school. They still think there is party politics, and they have to have a program and an ideology. And Trump is proving that doesn't matter. If you don't have any ideology
right.
or program. People don't care about
it. Yeah, it's just a popularity contest.
And that began, you could say, that began with Reagan.
The image, the icon of.
Yeah, even Zappa complained about it. He said he is sick of conventions. All it is bunting. Do you know what bunting is? B-U-N-T-I-N-G. You ever heard of that?
Like in baseball?
No.
Bunting is at different points, maybe it's only at the ending, when they nominate the presidential candidate and everybody's cheering, then they let the balloons and ribbons fall out of the ceiling. You remember that?
That's called bunting.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, that's called bunting. B-U-N-T-I-D, that floating, you know, graffiti. What did they used to call it in World War II, graffiti? No, it was a graffiti.
Confetti.
Confetti, that's right. It's confetti for weddings. And then there might be another word for when they would throw stuff, you know, the soldiers marched down Madison Avenue or Park Avenue, and, you know, millions
parade.
Of people would rain down paper from their offices. Well, that's now miniaturized and happens in every, you know, ending of a political convention. So Zappa satirized that.
Like a metaphor of somebody coming on you.
Yeah, the golden shower. Yeah, the golden shower that Zappa talked about. But Zappa, there's a couple of interviews where he's ranting on about these idiot presidents and their bunting. And he mocked that. So Zappa is old school on a certain level. And, you know, he represents the genius. and he's pissed off at the people. But Frank, he, being quadriphenic, he didn't stay stuck in that. He could shift from that detached perspective, critiquing the culture, to just being another rock and roller wailing, tranced in the electric drum, you know, pounding it out, just rocking away, no point of view. But you're right, Roxy. The old politician. Okay, so the Bunting thing starts in the 80s, if I remember. Reagan. Reagan brought in. He didn't remember. He's a dumb guy. He really hasn't got many ideas. He can't lay out an articulate program. So it became just a cheering. Like just the guy comes out and everybody starts cheering, and he doesn't have to say anything. He's just going to say, "America's great, and I'm going to win." What?
The pep rally.
Yes,
the pep rally. And it's just gotten worse and worse since Reagan. So
behind this slogan of "Make America Big Again" is what McLuhan was saying, that there is no more national or corporate identity, and also the individual identity was lost with the electric environment.
Right. Every form of identity was gone. Creating a constant.
Trying to retrieve the America.
Yes, Reagan tried to retrieve
America great again.
Now Reagan
doesn't exist anymore. The countries.
But let's go through the phases. Reagan said we must recover from the stigma of Vietnam. America lost in Vietnam. It wasn't fair. The media wasn't fair. We didn't treat our boys right. We need to recover a confidence. A celebration of the war was correct. So then, Reagan spends save face, which McLuhan predicted. Tribal people, the most important thing is saving face. So all through the 80s, Reagan would conduct little wars against little nobody countries to rebuild, to show that America was tough, you know? And then it peaked with the invasion of Iraq. But, they're trying to recover and reestablish the image of America. There's still a retrievable small town image that Reagan can retrieve. And the Enron Mean said he was successful. Remember his fucking funeral. He was given a pharaonic, meaning pharaoh derived, Egyptian fucking funeral. They had his fucking coffin out there for a fucking week. Up there at the top of the pyramid or someplace. You remember that? He lay in state for a fucking week like a mummified pharaoh. Okay, so he retrieved America as a sacred empire. All the time, digital technology sneaking up, and it's going to destroy America. So he covered it up. And Thompson writes about that, how Reagan and them revived the image of America, but actual chemical body of America fell apart. So here comes Trump redoing everybody, including Reagan. But what's he saying? America disappeared. There is no America to retrieve. Whereas Reagan retrieved an America that was important, that was powerful, that won World War II. Trump's saying the place is such a mess, we got to start over again. We have to rebuild the country. Reagan didn't say we have to rebuild the country. We just have to save face. We have to restore our historical meaning of the 60s.
Gotta check our shirt back in and get back on the horse.
Yeah, so Trump is post-apocalypse. What is that guy called? Max, Mel Gibbons, whatever that guy's name, those movies, Mad Max?
Mad Max, yeah.
Yeah, Mel Gibson. Post-Armageddon movie. I heard Roxy Snicker. That's her era. Is that your movie? That's her movie. She grew up looking at Mad Max in the post-apocalyptic world.
But I think it's quite revealing that he makes his whole plan to build this wall.
Yes.
Like, there is no more countries, but he somehow wants to...
That's rebuilding a country.
Market.
The digital world destroyed all spaces.
To retrieve the country by building a wall that says, this is America.
That's right.
Big again.
Yeah, we need boundaries. He's rebuilding the chemical body. The chemical body is built on a wall, a division between heaven and earth. You know, the literate thing, it got exaggerated with literacy, but the idea that you are bounded, a bounded space, that's the anthropomorphic physical. That's the chemical body being retrieved, and of course it has to have a tribe. And so you build a wall. He's building a castle. Aha! He's building a fucking castle that's feudal.
Balbus is building a wall.
Yeah, Balbus is building a wall. Now, that's a line in Portrait of the Artist's Young Man. Joyce took it. Balbus was a general, you know, Roman general or something. He built a wall. And this became a theme all through Joyce's writings. The building of the wall, you know, became the printing press and visual space and all that. That's, and then the wall is a big deal in Finnegan's Wake. So that's what she's quoting. Balbus is building a wall. And Balbus is the first syllables of the first thunder. It's ba-ba something. Bal-bal, you know, B-A-B-A. The Balbus of Balbus building a wall is in the first thunder. First syllable. I know it's really Bob, right? Bab. Bob. It begins with me, the first thunder. Think of that, man. Can you claim that? No, you can't. That's why I'm Bob. And
I can't claim that. My name's Bob.
Well, you are building a wall of mortar.
Yes. I am the
of
handy
thunderwork.
I'm a wall that I sell to people. Okay, you want to get away from the invasion of your five bodies by the android meme? We give you the product that insulates you and makes you feel stronger than the android meme. That's what the drops do. They give you autonomy. We create a temporary wall for you so you can get some slack. Then after you get bored of having slack, then you can enter the world of mortar again and be participatory tribal, but with new vigor because you know there's a place to go to retreat to. Remag, renew, nice. Remite, and RNA drops.
Retreat.
And realign.
Which is just the candy bar that you guys rebrand.
Yeah, the restructure. What candy bar? What was that?
I said retreat, but I was joking. Making a play on the word treat, like I mean retreat.
You're too burble. You're burbled. You're making a joke on retrieve.
Yeah, when I have to explain the jokes, we know that they're just not winners. We can move on.
Hey man,
I was saying retreat, like remite,
Nate, you're
retreat.
You're slurring your speech, Nate. Your speech is, you're up too late. Your speech is slurred.
All right, I'll try to be extra articulate.
Clearly. Yeah.
So, to recap this failed joke.
No, retrieve. I want to get the idea you're saying. You said something about retrieve.
All right. I said retreat.
Oh, retreat.
Yeah,
okay.
And then I said it, which is just a rebranded candy bar that you could.
Okay. All right. Yeah. We give people retrieved, retreated, a retreat. Relax and allow.
What would you say when Ion says that you obsolete all bodies?
That's happening. Ion,
trying to build the wall like a way of reacting to this dissolution, like they need this sort of physical boundary that somehow...
Okay, when Ion rejected McLuhan in the first year, and then he started saying, we like your bodies model. I said, well, that comes from McLuhan. So he had to concede a little bit, but he told me, you can only bring up McLuhan, you can quote him, but then you must say, however, Bob says, and they demanded that I go further than McLuhan, because I said I had gone past McLuhan. So emphasize yourself. If you're going to quote McLuhan, okay, but always say, however. So sometimes I would quote McLuhan and forget, and then I would come in, however, he'd prompt me, however, and then I have to make up some shit about me, right? So he's actually encouraged the talking of me and making it all about me. So then he's talking about the five bodies, and then one day he says, well, Bob, you know, they actually are obsolete. They've merged, and we're in a new zone. And he didn't know that I knew that, because I consider the chart a visualization of a merged situation, but you can't see the merged thing because you see the five quadrants. But visually, it looks separate. So he then went on about, we moved to the hexad, the sixth body. And he actually shut down fivebody.com. We couldn't get on it for 2 or 3 months. I would not let anybody on there until I changed my name to six-bodied. I was called five-body. And so he actually interfered on the website. This is back when it was still active and people wanted to be on it, but they couldn't. So he talked about the merger of the five bodies, and I was able to talk about it, but he keeps, you'll see him saying, Bob doesn't know the Endor means gone, or that those five bodies have disappeared. That's the hidden ground of my chart, is the disappearance, because it says at the bottom of the chart, waiting for the spinning clothing crystals, waiting for organic bodies, the spinning clothing crystals have danced the hex advertisement. That's the hexadic, that's the sixth level. Now, waiting for organic bodies, we have an argument in the LaRouche quadrant, the Thompson quadrant, the McLuhan quadrant, the Kroger quadrant, and the Dobbs quadrant over what is a body today. So you have different levels of retrieval. You have Trump politics and boring stuff is a retrieval of the chemical body. New virtual Silicon Alley technologies are a retrieval of the chip body. Better and better TV shows is a retrieval of the TV body. So there's endless retrieval of the bodies, Baroque spirals of excellence. But politics is a retrieval of the chemical body. All right? So that's the merger. And it's, yeah, we're definitely post-merger because the five, Trump, he can't get as far as us. We're in the hexadic. He can retrieve pentatically the chemical body quadrant with a bit of Dobbs quadrant thrown in, but it's not going to lead anywhere. He's got a bigger problem, which is us, what we're doing to the world.
True.
But, trumping the Donald.
Right. Trumping the Donald, right. And then you've got the five bodies, and you've got us trumping every one of them. We do better TV. We do better chip stuff, especially with Ion. We do better chemical body stuff with our products, and we do better astral knowledge, and we outdo the mystery body, because Ion is making the mystery body, he's exposing the mystery body, revealing it, and moving us past that to hexadic. So we got all the bodies. Now you, Nate, you didn't go to college, but Alyssa did. You guys went and got educated. Nothing like what you're hearing is taught. There's no inklings. There's a little bit of chip body if you read Kroger, but not many professors teach Kroger. Do you realize how avant-garde our curriculum is?
Yeah, it's the best salon out there, I think, for the edge of human thought.
Of everything. The edge of spiritual thought, because spiritual thought is merging with physical. So we even have a new zone called the two physical. It's not measurable, our success. And it's actually so nutty that the average limited person can project their superiority into us. They can easily feel they're superior to our nonsense, right? At whatever level they're coming in.
I suppose.
Like the Deepak Chopras, the David Wilcox, those guys in the New Age circuit, the Greg Bradens, who do forwards for all kinds of New Age books, they can't come near us. And they could actually say, well, that's actually an evil demon over there in Dobbstown, saying what he says, swearing and threatening to smoke people. We don't have
swearing.
The lovey dove. What?
Swearing.
Yeah, why do you say that? The way I said it?
Yeah, he's over there. He's a demon with his swear words.
Insulting people. We are so violent in New Age etiquette terms that they can feel superior to us. But they don't know that they're going to die off. We'll be still around. That psychic told me, did you re-listen to what the psychic I played last week? That psychic told me 96. Or maybe it was Bertie Catchings in 1988, said, Bob, you will outlive everybody. I've already outlived fucking everybody. Been here for thousands of years, right? But she picked up on it. You're going to outlive everybody. That's the best that a human being could come up with. Not that, holy shit, Bob, you've been here forever, and you're going to be here forever. You've been here,
you are,
and you're going.
Outliving everybody.
Yeah. So I thought it was neat that she picked up on that. So so what were we saying
before? Zappa.
Beg your pardon?
I said, man, we got to get back to Zappa.
We are going to. I'm going to go get an article, but there might be something else to say. We're having a very good conversation here, or I'm performing quite well. and you guys are supplementing me very well.
Speak for yourself.
A great example of what we want to illustrate, what is a troubadour, the findings, what you see in this whole phenomenon and how you analyze this from other angles.
They don't know how to talk the way I do. Now, the...
besides just the judgment of good and bad.
Right, right.
About Trump and his...
So we're saying Zappa. Zappa anticipated Iandom. And the modern troubadour would not be just walking in the countryside singing folk songs like 800 years ago and maybe getting access to a castle and seducing the queen or the princess or something. The troubadour today is in a population where everybody's adrift. Everybody's drifting. That's the name of Croker's book, Body Drift. All the bodies are drifting. So everybody is the old version, chemical body version of a troubadour. But a real up-to-date troubadour would drift into the different institutions of the android meme. So you see in Zappa's biography, he goes and visits the Rothschild Bank to get funding for his projects. They turn him down. He's going into TV studios. He's going into different media environments. That's where he's drifting. He's drifting into different media environments to get a position in them and hijack them. He's drifting over into orchestral music. He's drifted into rock music. Whereas the David Bowies in them, they just drifted on a smaller level. They do a movie.
He even drifted into politics.
Yes.
David
Bowie got himself into tax problems, so he had to live in Switzerland. He couldn't run for politics in Britain. You know, his native country. Zappa could. So Zappa is the ultimate troubadour before Ion. And he has to be a troubadour everywhere, as is shown in Finnegan's Wake. HCE is everywhere. Then Ion shows up as the completion of the troubadour myth, because Ion's drifting all over the place and telling us that we drifted over here, we killed Steve Jobs, we drifted over there, we killed Obama. Ion's listing all these people that the troubadour, he's a troubadour assassin. He's emperor come clone come assassin.
The goals are to become the lover who loves.
Yes.
But in the higher sense, like the troubadour understood.
That's a good point.
Love.
They brought in the concept of love.
Also, he also said, you are creating the new song. So it is the new art of the troubadour, of the finding and sharing.
That's a really good point. You realize, Nate, the idea of personal love comes in with the troubadours? They didn't have that in medieval times or going back.
I didn't realize that.
And it's a product
of
visual space. Yes. The literacy, the manuscript, the visual space coming in with the phonetic alphabet of the late Dark Ages, beginning of the later medieval, before the printing press, the idea of a private personality... private, not a role player. That is what love was. The knight would come in and engage with the role player, the queen, the princess, and he would seduce them from a corporate role where they would be married off to anybody, and it was a strict business tribal relationship. But to have personal emotion involvement with one person, the emperor, the princess doesn't do that. They put on everybody. They're impersonal. So tribal people are impersonal. This personal love comes in with the troubadours.
Interesting.
Yeah. So then, that gets exaggerated with the printing press, and then the nuclear family becomes a be-all and end-all, and marriage is a very important institution. Personal love is the ultimate saving grace for the average pagan or secular person or bourgeois. And then Ion said they were in a post-love world. That is accurate, because when you get into the electric age, people start to become role players, become impersonal, and they become, in Gutenberg terms, they become social psychopaths. You know, gang-banging, raping, seducing, adopting all kinds of sexual roles and identities quadriphenically becomes a violent exploration of a shattered identity. The love identity is gone. So we're well into a post-love world, a post-Gutenberg personal love world. And let's see.
Yes, and another thing, the singing of the new song is not only limited to this world. It's like Ion says, you can go further to other worlds.
Right.
So the troubadour.
That's a good point.
The new song is.
Yeah, you're troubadouring across worlds. That's right. And you can have families in different worlds. Like Ion says, McLuhan has three families. Yeah, he had three families.
Really? Hmm.
Yeah. So the traveling is a new troubadour's travel. There's a new kind of traveling when everybody is in the same space and can't, and there's nowhere time and space, there's nowhere to move to. Well, then Ion comes in with a anti-environment. Oh, no, there's other worlds. So that's one part of traveling. But Ion also emphasizes that you ascend on the spot. You going to other worlds is fun and dandy, but ascension is more than traveling. So Ion is the anti-environment of traditional troubadour mythology. He's the anti-environment to everything, every meme, every institution. And Zappa attempted to be that. Finney's Wake attempted to be that. Dobbs attempted to be that before Ion showed up.
Yes, and you said also that the troubadour is very important in the Finnegan's Wake.
Yes, the Tristan and Isolde, that major, you know, medieval troubadour myth, is a key story in Finnegan's Wake. It begins with Tristan he's cuckolded King Mark.
And the castle of the head.
Yeah, House Castle and environs. There was a fad to retrieve medievalism in the 20s, and it begins in the 19th century with John Ruskin and the Pre-Raphaelites. Do you know about them? William Morris, the craft movement. They did not like, in the 1850s, 60s, they didn't like the industry, the shoddy or mass-produced industrial products, so they retrieved the aesthetics of the chemical body working and making beautiful objects. Now, it was a lost cause, but LaRouche spends a lot of time in the late 70s, early 80s, describing how the oligarchs, the aristocrats of England, wanted to retrieve a medieval sensibility. So they promoted William Morris, John Ruskin, the Pre-Raphaelites, and Oscar Wilde, and all these guys. They represented retrieval of pre-printing press sensibility, which the aristocrat was invested in. And some of these aristocrats were these parallel worlder guys that we find along the Loire Valley. So LaRouche says, no, that's nostalgia. But the aristocrats had nothing going for them but promoting the retrieval, and much of the art of the teens and 20s was still craft-oriented. In the art schools, there was a big craft movement again in the 60s and 70s, and LaRouche was against that. And McLuhan was against that. In the sense, they said, this is just a knee-jerk, fad retrieval, and will have no staying power, and is not about the ground. And Zappa was like that. He said he hated poetry. He knocked all the traditional arts that the counterculture was taking time to do in the 60s, 70s, 80s. And Roxy did that when she went to Berlin. She engaged in the counterculture of performances, theater, making costumes. She was doing the craft stuff, right, Roxy? That's what you did.
Yes.
You were a Pre-Raphaelite, a dupe of Queen Victoria and those 19th century oligarchs. That's why I felt quite confident in not doing anything. I wasn't going to become a craft person. I was not going to make anything, because I knew processing. McLuhan says in one of those great recordings from Tony Schwartz, he says, the job, the work of today, is to stay informed and engage in pattern recognition and just know what's going on. That's all I did for 40 years. Engage in pattern recognition, kept up on what was going on, by specializing on the best pattern recognizers. LaRouche, May Bussell, Joyce, Lewis, Zappa.
Sure, and furthering their work.
Furthering and completing the work. Unknown that, I mean, a media whore is Ion. Pattern recognition, the fucking guy can't stop, or they can't stop making patterns. That's what he does constantly. They're like a broadcaster. He's always wanting us to comment or ask about what's happening in the news, in the stock market, in the White House, in the campaigns, in art, in movies. He's up. He's up to date. He's informed, right? He's a whore of pattern recognition.
Quite informed.
Yes, super informed. So he's showing all that McLuhan said you had to become. Even if Ion is from the astral plane, which is the Thompson quadrant, then he's showing that even the astral plane has to do this pattern recognition.
That's what life does.
Beg your pardon?
Is that I?